You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello, everyone. A warm welcome along to the Football Writers Association podcast here in association with William Hill. Good to have you with us ahead of the Premier League weekend. We're going to go through the five televised matches this weekend, starting with Manchester United and Bournemouth and finishing on Monday night at 8 p.m. with West Ham versus Chelsea. Each and every week, we get one of the top football writers in the land to preview the live games, and this week, no different. Danny Taylor, the chief football writer from The Guardian, joins me right now on the line. And first of all, Danny, congratulations to you, because the SJA Awards took place the other night, and you scooped two awards, the Football Writer of the Year and the Scoop of the Year as well, for your brilliant work on the sex abuse scandal. So first of all, congratulations to you, Danny.
Thanks very much. I appreciate that. It's a difficult one to celebrate in one way. Obviously, the content of that story, you know, most of it being about the football abuse. But I did say in my speech, you know, it was really I did the easy work compared to the lad that came forward. But you know, it was nice to be recognised, and nice of to know you've got the trust of those players, basically, and that they wanted to do it through The Guardian.
It must have been a harrowing story to have covered as well, Danny.
Well, it's certainly different. I mean, normally I'm a hamstrings and offsides man, basically, so it's certainly different. But I do have my kind of journalistic schooling in terms of the news side of the paper. So, you know, so I've kind of started doing court cases and door knocking and all the other things that sort of front of the paper people have to do. So it's not entirely new, you know, but I must say, you know, it's as well as being a journalist, you know, I've been a kind of a bit of a social worker at times, a drinking partner, and kind of, you know, I've befriended a lot of these players who've come forward. And, you know, it'd be difficult for me to, it's been harrowing for me, because I feel a little bit lax when I know what these players have been through and how difficult it is for them now, really. So, but, you know, it's been it's been emotional, I think, is probably the better way to say it.
Yeah. Well, congratulations anyway, Danny,
Thank you for those
two awards. And before we get stuck into the five televised games, one team we're not going to talk about in great detail on this podcast, because they're not televised this weekend, is Leicester City. But they've been heavily in the news for the last 10 to 12 days now, following the sacking of Claudio Ranieri. What's your view on that? Is it player power taking over yet again? And are you surprised as to how some of the senior players have behaved, mainly in regards to Ranieri, not supporting him in this situation?
Well, I'm never too surprised in football these days. I think that's probably a good party to have. But, I understand the initial outrage. I understand why people are upset and people are a bit angry. You know, Claudio Ranieri, what he did for them. Incredible part of an incredible story, and such a great guy as well. You know, I think everyone really has a natural affection for him almost. And so basically to see the senior players, and a lot of them, despite what they say, had turned against him, and, you know, meetings with the owners and stuff, it doesn't sit well. At the same time, however, I would say, you know, beyond that initial emotional reaction, I do think that the decision could be justified at the end of the season. If they stay up, people say, you know, Ranieri deserves a full season, but if they were convinced that they were going to be relegated with Ranieri in charge, unfortunately, you know, he is old enough and streetwise enough and experienced enough to realise that nobody is immune, because there's so much money these days. Football, a club like Leicester with, you know, very ambitious owners from abroad, they don't want to make a sentimental choice of, yes, you can stay even if you're ready, you know, and take us down. If they really thought that, if the players had really given up on him as much as it looks like, then you can see at the end of the season the decision might be justified. If they do bring in another manager and stay up, then Leicester can come at the end of the season saying they did the right thing. I don't think too many fans disagree. There's a way of doing it. I don't like the way they did it. You know, he basically found out for another member of staff, and, you know, they deceived the media, they deceived everyone really with their statement saying that he had their, you know, unwavering support. And, you know, what was it, 16 days? Well, it was actually 2 days later that Paolo took the decision to get rid of him. 16 days later that they announced it. And you just think, well, you know, why? What is it about football that enables people to lie so easily and to put out stuff that, you know, is going to just look terrible in a couple of weeks and then not seemingly be too embarrassed about it?
That's often the death knell, isn't it? The unwavering support of the board.
Well,
nowadays,
yeah,
as far as management's concerned.
It says a lot, doesn't it, when people put that out, that me, myself as a journalist, I mean, I know I probably sound a bit cynical here, but my initial reaction is, you know, uh-oh. You know what? You know, let's keep an eye on this one, really, because, you know, I just don't trust these statements. Basically, I realise some people might be listening, thinking, "Well, I don't trust some newspapers," but, but genuinely, you know, football clubs spin the truth more than any. You know, football clubs and politicians are masters at being economical with the truth.
Let's talk about this weekend's football and the televised games this weekend, Danny. And we'll start with Manchester United versus Bournemouth at Old Trafford. And Manchester United, heavily odds on, as you would anticipate here. 1-4 they are to win the game. The draw 5-1 and Bournemouth 12-1. Unbeaten in 16 league matches, Manchester United, and have the EFL Cup in the trophy cabinet now, having beaten Southampton last weekend in that competition. And Jose Mourinho clearly doing the right things at the club. They've drawn too many matches, though, and that's why they're so far behind Chelsea in the title race.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're on a great run, Manchester United, but see, they've been sixth since, I think it certainly going back to the end of last year. I think it was maybe the start of December, or maybe even a little bit earlier. They just can't get rid of, or they can't climb any higher, basically, because the teams above them are not dropping too many points. Maybe Liverpool accepted, but it's been a strange run, really. I mean, but ultimately, it's been a positive run as well. And Manchester United, the club does feel a happy place again now. It's taken some time. It never really happened with Van Gaal era, so it didn't happen in David Moyes era either. But there is a sense now that the club is getting back into being a serious player. They're obviously quite a way back from the top of the league. You know, that isn't every court, but they are the team in form, really, and behind them. Tottenham have lost a few games. Arsenal have obviously had a bad spell. I mean, Manchester City have been doing quite well recently, but Liverpool have had a really poor run. It's not beyond United to climb a couple of places, but they certainly have to be patient, because at the moment, they're sort of deadlocked in this sixth position.
And Bournemouth, have they been a little bit naive this season? They don't seem to have improved defensively. And Eddie Howe, for all he's being touted as maybe Arsene Wenger's successor in time, he's not really shored them up defensively this season.
Well, they've conceded 51 goals now, which is more than any of the bottom three teams. It's the second worst in the league. They're the worst defence, actually, Swansea. But when you talk about Manchester United's momentum, you see what Bournemouth did in their FA Cup tie at Millwall, where they were on a decent run going into that game, and they put out a substantially weakened team and lost. And then ever since then, it just seems to have sort of disintegrated a little bit. So, yes, I take your point. Eddie Howe's first time really has been taking a little bit of criticism in the media, and I understand where it's coming from. I still don't feel totally comfortable with it. When you think where Bournemouth were when he started with them, you know, it's certainly not crisis with Bournemouth. They're the 14th in the league, and that's after, you know, a really bad run. So I still think of Bournemouth as being, you know, a great success story, but there is a problem defensively with them, and that's always been the case. You know, they play attractive football and they try to score goals, but they don't keep many clean sheets. And if you stop scoring goals and you've got a leaky defence, then, you know, you are going to start dropping. You know, I would certainly say they're in the relegation fight at the moment, even though they're obviously, you know, they're above that initial pack that everyone's been looking at. But Bournemouth are the team that are actually dropping. So, you know, this weekend it's a very difficult game for them. I'd be very surprised if it's anything but a home win, really.
How emphatic do you think Manchester United will be able to beat Bournemouth this weekend, Danny?
Well, I think it'll be... United aren't really a team this season of winning games 4-0, 5-0. You know, they've they haven't, for one reason or another, been scoring too many goals. In fact, let me just have a look. If you look at how many goals they've scored, they scored 38 and Bournemouth scored 36. So, you know, there isn't, the teams above United, they're all in the 50s, basically. So United, you know, maybe because Wayne Rooney's, you know, he's only got five this year. There's a heavy reliance on Ibrahimovic. He's obviously having a great run. I probably would say, if you put me on the spot, I probably would look at maybe a 3-0 or a 3-1. But the days of, Sir Alex Ferguson's happiest times, you look at that game and you think, God, you'd be looking at that thinking, that, you know, 5-0 written all over it, and you wouldn't bat an eyelid if it happened. But they're not playing defensively, as some people said, inaccurately, of Mourinho at the start of the season, that he would bring in a defensive team. That's certainly not been the case, but they're still not quite being able to sort of really put teams away like that. So I'd probably go 3-1.
3-1 to Manchester United, 10-1 in the betting here with William Hill. Anfield on Saturday night, 5:30 kickoff, Liverpool versus Arsenal. It's 23-20 Liverpool to win the match. The draw 12-5 and Arsenal 13-5. How do you explain Liverpool's loss of form, Danny?
Well, it's a difficult one. People keep jumping to this conclusion that all the press, you know, the sort of fast pressing style of Klopp, the players must be worn out. But I don't buy that. When you look at Manchester United, they're playing, Manchester United are in all the competitions. They're playing, you know, Thursday, Sunday. They've got an FA Cup tie coming up when they play on Monday, and then they've got a Europa League game in Ukraine the following Thursday. So basically, you know, it's a non-stop schedule for them at the moment. Whereas Liverpool didn't have Europe or Champions League at the start of the season. So basically they could, as Chelsea have, you know, concentrate on the games. So I just can't believe that it's fatigue. I really, really don't understand that. They have teams work them out a little bit. There's probably a bit of that. And also maybe some of the players who were doing really well early in the season, you know, the likes of Adam Lallana, Firmino, people like that, some of them have never really shown that they can do that from the start of a season to the end of a season without having periods of, you know, in and out, drifting in and out. And so it's a strange, because I have to be honest, when Liverpool were right at the top, and, you know, when they went to Everton on that, and, you know, won the game in the last minute, and they beat Manchester City, and I was really, you know, along with everyone, thinking this they're going to have a really good go at this league. And then obviously, you know, now they've dropped down to fifth. They've got United behind them. United have got a game in hand on them, so, you know, United can overtake them. It's turning into a bad season for them when everyone expected this to be a great season for them. You know, only look at the cup defeat as well. It's you know, it's been an awful long time since Liverpool won the league, 1990, and I think people thought that this might be the season when they at least pushed hard for it. And the fact is that, you know, we're talking, we've been talking for the last month or so about this, and it's 3 or 4 months from the end of the season, it's become apparent that it's never going to happen. I shouldn't say never, but it's certainly not going to happen this season.
And I get the feeling that Jurgen Klopp, when he came into the league, with his attitude and his effusive personality, he bought a lot of good faith with the press. And that could begin to wane, because it's a results game at the end of the day, and they're not getting them at the moment, Liverpool.
Yeah, I think we're a little bit away from that point at the moment. I think, I mean, if their current form continues, you know, if we're talking about this in 6 weeks' time, then yes, all of a sudden, you're thinking the owners are going to start being twitchy if they see the team is on a, you know, is it a blip or is it a more general trend? I would say more probably a blip, and that, you know, they will get back together again between now and the end of the season. But the damage has been quite substantial, and as blips go, it's been a pretty long, you know, it hasn't been just a couple of games. Mm. It's been pretty much since the turn of the year, really. So they've had a bad couple of months. They really need to sort of turn it around pretty quickly.
Any insight into what Arsene Wenger's just looking at Arsenal now? Any insight into whether he's going to extend that contract?
Well, I wish I could absolutely confirm that categorically. My hunch is that unless Arsenal have a terrible end to the season, that he'll still be here. he wants to stay. Still, the idea that of him managing somewhere else doesn't quite sit right. I don't think Barcelona particularly keen on the idea as it stands. Our Spanish correspondent Sid Lowe's very good, and the names he's hearing, Arsene Wenger's not among those prominently anyway. So it's strange with Arsenal because they always seem to have a crisis and a bit of a meltdown, but they're very, very good at the point when you think, God, this is looking terrible, of reacting quite well. And every time they're on this point where you think the fans are really going to turn on Wenger if they lose this next game, they tend to get a result. So it wouldn't really surprise me if they actually went to Anfield and actually did okay. So I'm actually going to go for an away win, possibly sort of maybe a 1-0 away, which, Arsenal don't win too many games 1-0 away these days, but I've just got a feeling on this one that they might make it even more difficult time for Liverpool.
Arsenal to win the game 1-0, available at 11-1. Let's move on to Sunday's televised games. Tottenham versus Everton. First up, 1:30 kickoff, and Spurs are 4-6 to win this game. The draw 14-5 with Everton 9-2. You mentioned Sid Lowe there momentarily, Danny, and I suppose these two managers might be in contention for the Barcelona job when Luis Enrique leaves at the end of the season. Mauricio Pochettino available at 14-1 to get the Barcelona job, with Ronald Koeman 8-1 to be next Barcelona manager. And Koeman in particular, he seems to be a very driven man, Danny, as if he's had his managerial career, as if he's mapped it out himself, and he sees Barcelona as his number one job. Of course, he was a player there in his pomp as well. So Koeman 8-1 to be next Barca manager.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, off the two, if you're going to give me the choice, I still think, from Southampton to Everton to Barcelona is a pretty big leap. I know there have been bigger leaps in the past, but, I do wonder whether Koeman might have to work or do a little bit better. You know, Everton are going along, quite nicely. They're in seventh, but you couldn't really see them pushing into the top six from where they are. You know, they're doing okay. They sometimes are very good, sometimes they're a bit flat. It hasn't been a season really where you've been looking at Everton and thinking, what an incredible job guy's doing. You know, there have been times when you've had a really good start to the season. There are times when you look at them and think, they're a decent team this lot, but I'm not sure. I've not really been completely seduced by the idea of Ronald Koeman at Everton so far. I've not really been, if Everton are, Everton, it sounds a bit harsh, but, I probably, as a neutral, would want rather to see Tottenham playing, to be honest. I think Tottenham are a more attractive team to watch. I think Pochettino is, a great manager. Is he a Barcelona-style manager in the kind of way of Luis Enrique, Pep Guardiola? It's certainly a different style. Pressing is reasonably similar, but essentially Pochettino's teams, and people sometimes ignore this, that they are based on basically having a very strong defence. They've only let in 18 goals this season, which is actually the best in the league, and they don't get too much credit for it. I think maybe people historically think Tottenham being a bit of a soft touching defence, think what he's done there. I think they had the best defensive figures this season as well. So it's worth noting that.
You mentioned Pochettino and his defensive record so far this season for Tottenham. Are they too heavily reliant still on Harry Kane, do you think, to make a persistent, consistent challenge for the title?
Well, it always depends. I mean, basically, I sometimes slightly surprised that a lot of these clubs, they always seem to be very reliant on one central striker. Obviously playing 4-2-3-1. And you think, well, if that striker gets injured, this is why, I quite often, if at the start of the season, would go for Manchester City to win the league, because there have been times when Manchester City have had three or four top strikers. And you think, well, at least if Aguero gets injured, they've got, at that time, Zeko, and, I mean, never really happened Balotelli, but he was another one. And behind that, there was Tevez. They've always had like a big list of strikers. Manchester United, in their best days, would have three or four strikers. And you know, it has slightly changed now because teams are generally playing with just one central striker, and you need a bit of luck for that to happen, basically. You know, Jamie Vardy didn't miss many games last season when Leicester were winning the league. Harry Kane is obviously, you know, he's had an injury spell this season when he was badly missed. You know, Chelsea, Diego Costa spent most of the season. So you do need, you know, unless there's someone behind you who's going to score relatively at the same rate, and Tottenham just do not have that, then, you know, you do need a bit of luck, and you do need to make, you know, to make sure that player is you know, kept well. That's one way of playing, you know, rested in a few games and, you know, just look after him, basically.
What's your prediction for this game then, Tottenham versus Everton, Danny?
Relatively close, and I probably would say Tottenham edging it, but I think it could be. I'll probably go for 2-1.
2-1 to Tottenham.
2-1 to Tottenham, yeah.
Available at 7-1 here with William Hill. Sunderland versus Man City is the 4 p.m. kickoff on Sunday afternoon. Sunderland, a huge price at 10-1 to win this game. The draw 9-2 with Manchester City, 100-30 on. Sunderland, rock bottom of the Premier League at the moment. And as you mentioned earlier on in the podcast, City are playing pretty well at the moment. Scored 10 goals in their last two games. Admittedly, five of those came against a Huddersfield side who rested players midweek in the FA Cup. But Pep Guardiola in new territory to a certain extent, because he's lost five league games as a manager so far. He's never lost six league games as a manager of a team before. So I suppose it's... Do you think Guardiola's been surprised about how difficult the transition's been from Spanish football to the Premier League?
Yes, I do. And I think most people have been surprised about how difficult he's found it, because he's certainly had a long time to prepare for it. And, you know, I mean, it always surprises managers, I think, but some of the things that he tried just clearly haven't worked. And obviously when he arrived, one of the great managers in the modern era, isn't he? You know, there's no getting away from that, and he still is. But let's be honest, some of the stuff that he's tried just hasn't worked. You know, moving out Joe Hart might have worked if you're bringing in a better goalkeeper, but unfortunately the goalkeeper has reached the point where, in this game against Huddersfield, when he was making, you know, rudimentary saves, the crowd was so disillusioned with him that basically, you know, there were ironic cheers, you know, every time he caught the ball, and it was a subject in the press conference afterwards, because, you know, but that does tell you something about Claudio Bravo's season. You know, every time there's a shot towards him, you think it's going to go in, basically, and that isn't really an exaggeration, because I think it was certainly one point where I think it was let in 16 goals from 24 shots, and of those other eight, two of them had been blocked by defenders, so we'd only actually made six saves. There's an extraordinary stat about the number of times, the first time a shot comes in, it's a goal, which again happened the other night. And so that side's a worry. On the more positive note, Guardiola described Aguero's performance in midweek. Yes, it was only against the Championship team, as the best he'd seen from him. And if Aguero can basically get, you know, feeling confident again, because I do think that this season he struggled with not being the main man. I'm not sure Guardiola's man managed him brilliantly, because we all know Aguero, when he's confident and flying, you know, he's capable of winning matches on his own. And this season he just seems to have been slightly troubled, and I think he realises that Guardiola doesn't fancy him as much as previous managers might have done. Certainly doesn't talk about him in the same glowing terms as the previous managers. And I think, you know, Aguero isn't used to that, and his body language has changed, and he just not looked as happy. But, I mean, he's just an extraordinarily lethal striker.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if he's back on form, I mean, this game, I really can't see Sunderland getting anything out of it. You know, the bottom of the league again, people clung to this hope that maybe the 4-0 win at Crystal Palace might be a turning point, but they're not a great team, Sunderland. They haven't done well in the transfer market whatsoever. You know, nobody could really argue if they were relegated that it was undeserved. I think they've been in the bottom three pretty much since the outset, really. So this one, if Man City if Man City turn up as they can do, I probably would be very uncharitable on Sunderland, and I'll call this a 4-0 away win.
At Manchester City to win the game 4-0, available at 10-1. If you think Sergio Aguero can score two or more in the game, that's available at 9-4. You mentioned that performance against Huddersfield, and Guardiola said it was the best he'd seen Aguero play. Very quickly on this one, Danny, is that a turning point for Aguero? Because I was assuming, or the assumption was, that Aguero would be leaving in the summer, given he'd fallen behind the pecking order to Gabriel Jesus before Jesus got his injury.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me whatsoever, because Guardiola made it clear that Jesus is now his number one striker, and we all know that Aguero is back in the team. Yes, he's scoring goals and, you know, getting a bit of praise now, but he's in the team because another player's injured. Now Aguero would have the best clubs in the world after him. You know, I'm sure teams like Real Madrid and various others are all looking at the situation, thinking there's one of the most prolific strikers in the world. Looking a bit unhappy, his manager's sort of 1 minute. I mean, Gallier's got this habit of, he'll say sort of five nice things about Aguero, and then the sixth thing he says, he's sort of stopping sentence, because he'll say about, you know, how important he is and we can't move on without him. And then the sixth thing is something that he'll basically just drop in, yeah, but I can't say he'll definitely be here next season, yeah, or something like that. And he used to talk about how amazing Sami Nasri had been in training. He never played him, and basically Nasri, one of the first players who were bombed out. And he talked about how, you know, Joe Hart being an amazing professional, and we all knew that he wanted to get rid of Joe Hart. And it just, so, you know, we're all kind of, the English journalists who are covering the club, we're all getting used to these little kind of tricks that he has to in press conferences, where, you know, what to read out from them, and hopefully they don't read too much into them. But Aguero thing, I certainly think his future's undecided, yeah, at the moment. You know, he keeps bringing it up himself in interview. It's not that he's facing 15 questions all on the same subject. You know, he has talked freely about the fact that he would like, or he hasn't heard from the club itself about whether he wants to stay. So, you know, I wouldn't be astonished if he stayed, but on the flip side, I wouldn't be too amazed if he left either. But again, it goes back to my earlier point. If he leaves and Jesus, you know, had an amazing start, a lot of players have amazing starts, it's whether he can keep it up for an entire season. If he left, then City all of a sudden, you know, there's Iheanacho, but there's no other Aguero in the background. It's just, you know, I must admit, I would personally, and I certainly would never position myself as anyone to lecture to Guardiola, really, but personally, I would probably rather have Jesus as being the understudy to Aguero rather than the other way around. But, you know, it's ultimately somebody else's decision, isn't it? And there is a sense among some of the senior players at Man City that Guardiola likes, you know, he likes his own players, rather than inheriting a lot of the players, senior players, leave that, you know, he likes to have the control of the dressing room, and that means basically moving out some of the established players, bringing in players who are all kind of his players, as it were. So we'll see anyway, but he's a great player, Aguero, and I think he'll cause something a lot of problems, judging by the other night.
West Ham versus Chelsea is the final game of the weekend, Monday night. West Ham are 5-1 to win it, Danny. The draw 3-1 with Chelsea in the betting at 8-13. As a neutral, I'm just hoping Chelsea slip up, because we could easily get into the last 6 or 7 weeks of the season, Danny, and the title be decided already, because Chelsea are 10 points clear at the top and they show no signs of stopping. And I think N'Golo Kanté could be the... I know there have been some fantastic Chelsea performances this season. Eden Hazard is back to his best as well, but Kanté has been incredibly influential in this Chelsea side.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what a testament to the player and the importance of someone like that, to think that he almost certainly will end up having two Premier League medals with two different teams, both of whom, it's worth pointing out, weren't... Well, I mean, we all know Leicester weren't fancy, but I mean, where Conte has picked up Chelsea from last season. They finished 10th, but I mean, they spent most of the last season in the even further down. So to turn that team into, I know they won the league the year before, but there was a lot of problems there after Mourinho left. And to turn that team around and into what they've done is an incredible achievement. And I think Conte's been fantastic, really. You know, he's not caused controversy. He's been, you know, he's been respectful. You know, he's avoided Mourinho's attempts to kind of wind him up and bring, you know, little chipping away as Mourinho sometimes does. You know, I just think he's been a likeable manager, basically, as well as obviously a very talented one. So, in terms of this game, I must admit I can't really remember a particularly illuminating performance from Watford West Ham this season against the big teams, unless you can correct me. But I've certainly seen them lose badly to Manchester City twice. So I've lose badly to Arsenal once, and I'm just not entirely sure about this West Ham team. I think they've dropped back a little bit from where they were. You know, first season problems, new ground, etc. A bit flaky. They've improved since the start of the season, when they obviously started really badly. But even in that improvement, I've not really seen a particularly impressive side there. You know, they're a mid-table team, basically, and I think they're going to need a bit of work before they can, you know, they can start looking above themselves and trying to sort of gatecrash that higher environment, really. So if both teams turn up, I would probably go for 3-1 Chelsea away win.
3-1 to Chelsea, available at 12-1. Do you think that those big teams, Danny, they're going to enjoy going to the London Stadium now? We've seen it on a few occasions this season with City going there twice and walloping West Ham, and Arsenal on one occasion back in early December, I think it was, went to the London Stadium and obliterated West Ham. I reckon those big sides are going to enjoy that. Just that expansive. They've got a lot of room to manoeuvre on that pitch in that stadium now.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, a lot of these new stadiums, there's not that kind of old home environment of, you know, I mean, places that you typically describe as difficult to go to, you know, like Goodison Park's one, Anfield's another. You know, it's kind of the fans are on top of you, and it's sort of noisy and it's historic, and you know, you kind of, in Liverpool's great days, you sort of, people would sort of stand waiting to stand in the tunnel knowing they're going to get beaten. Or, you know, the same with Old Trafford. And it's just West Ham, it's all very shiny and new, and I don't really think there's much of a home advantage there at the moment. I think they're slowly getting. I haven't been there for a few weeks, to be fair, and I've heard it's, you know, the atmosphere has improved and it's slowly getting there, as it always was going to, but it has taken a bit of time, which is probably inevitable. But it's certainly not one of those places that I think an away team would fear going to, or, you know, the West Ham teams aren't a team really to be too sort of fearful of. And, you know, the stadium, you know, so it almost felt like a neutral place at the start. And I think the West Ham players probably felt a little bit under pressure for the first half of the season.
Danny, thank you for your company on this podcast.
Pleasure.
Are you at a football match this weekend?
I'm at West Ham. I'm not this weekend. I've got a rare weekend off, but I will be at West Ham, Chelsea on Monday, then Arsenal on Tuesday, and then Man City on Wednesday. So quickly back into the routine. But I've actually got the weekend off, so I may go and see my own team, which is Nottingham Forest, who are playing Brighton at home, which probably will be a convincing away victory, unfortunately.
Let's hope not. Thank you for your company, Danny.
Pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned into the podcast to listen. Please do follow Danny on Twitter if you don't already do so, at DT Guardian, and you can follow myself at D Kellner. Make sure you check out all the odds for those matches this weekend on the William Hill website as well, and we'll be back on the FWA podcast next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.